This is David Duke. Let me give you some of the quotes of the Lubavitcher movement. And it's really kind of amazing. You know, for your further reading, go to my website, davidduke.com. Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who headed the Chabad movement, wielded great influence among many religious Jews in Israel, as well as in the United States, wrote many things which could only be defined as extremely hateful and racist, I guess, is the proper word for it, against non-Jews, against white people and other non-Jews around the world. Schneerson and his Lubavitch followers are Haredim. Nevertheless, they involve themselves in Israel's political life, and they've shared many concepts with Gush Emunim and the NRP, and that's the National Religious Party in Israel, which is so radical. And the ideas of Rabbi Schneerson that appear, that I'm going to quote to you, are from a book of his recorded messages to followers in Israel. So this is a book by their own people, for their own people. And the book is called Gatherings on Conversations, and published in the Holy Land in 1965. And during the subsequent three decades of his life until his death, Rabbi Schneerson remained consistent. He did not change any of his opinions. What Rabbi Schneerson taught was or immediately became official Lubavitch Hasidic belief. Regarding the non-Jews, and it's pretty amazing, this is pretty amazing stuff, his views were extremely, I guess the word for it would be radical or hateful. In such a manner, here's a quotation, in such a manner the halakha stipulated by the Talmud showed that a non-Jew should be punished by death if he kills an embryo, even if the embryo is non-Jewish, while the Jew should not be killed, even if the embryo is Jewish. Well, Lubavitcher Rebbe, and they called him the Rebbe, and this is like the grand rabbi, he continued, quote, the difference between a Jewish and non-Jewish person stems from the common expression, let us differentiate. Thus, we do not have a case of profound change in which a person is merely on a superior level. Rather, we have a case of let us differentiate between a totally different species. Now, here's what he's saying, that there's between Jews and Gentiles is a totally different species. A different DNA, really, is what they say in many of their writings. And this is what needs to be said about the body. The body of a Jewish person is of a totally different quality from the body of members of all nations of the world. On page 60 it says, however, it is so great that the body should be considered as completely different species. This is a reason why the Talmud states that there is a halakhic difference in attitude about the bodies of non-Jews as opposed to the bodies of Jews. Their bodies are in vain. An even greater difference exists in regard to the soul. Two contrary types of soul exist. A non-Jewish soul comes from three satanic spheres, while the Jewish soul stems from holiness. And this is, I'm quoting from Rabbi Schneerson, who was called the Rebbe, the famous Rebbe, the famous leader of this movement, and his words are like holy writ to these people. We therefore ask, why should a non-Jew be punished if he kills even a non-Jewish embryo, while a Jew should not be punished if he kills a Jewish embryo? And by the way, the reason why this seems to be so disorganized and disjointed is because this is from a series of tapes that they made into a book. So there's a lot of repetition here, and it seems like you're seeing the same thing in many different ways again and again. Anyway, these are direct quotes from the book. The answer can be understood by considering the general difference between Jews and non-Jews. A Jew was not created as a means for some other purpose. He himself is the purpose, since the substance of all divine emanations was created only to serve the Jews. And I've talked about this before. This is my commentary here. The essence of a lot of Judaism is that Jews themselves are God. That that's the whole essence. That they are God. In fact, it says in the Talmud, if you hit a Jew, you're hitting God. And that's pretty pretty major stuff, ladies and gentlemen, in terms of their attitude toward other people. It says, quote, the substance of all divine emanations was created only to serve the Jews. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Genesis 1:1 means the heavens and the earth were created for the sake of the Jews, who are called the beginning. This means everything, all developments, all discoveries of creation, including the heavens and the earth, are vanity compared to the Jews. The important things are the Jews because they do not exist for any other aim. They themselves are the divine aim. What this basically says is that Jews are God. And that's almost what some of these evangelicals are preaching today, because they basically preach that you must, if you don't stand up for the Jews, then you're working against God. Of course, the New Testament has something quite different to say about all that, but those quotations where it says the Jews are not in the covenant are no longer, they seem to be preached by the Christian church anymore. We know they're very clearly written in the New Testament. And I'll go on. This is from the Rebbe, the famous Lubavitcher rabbi who is still almost divinely worshipped today in the Lubavitch movement, which is a very powerful movement of millions of Jews around the world. And as I said on my website, you can see a picture of them celebrating in the White House. A non-Jew's entire reality is only vanity, it's written, and the stranger shall stand and feed your flocks, Isaiah 61:5. The entire creation of a non-Jew exists only for the sake of Jews. Now, regarded as one of the Lubavitcher sect's leading authorities on Jewish mysticism, the St. Louis-born Rabbi Yitzhak Ginsburg, who also has a graduate degree in mathematics, speaks freely of Jews' genetic-based spiritual superiority over non-Jews. It is a superiority that he asserts invests Jewish life with greater value in the eyes of the Torah. Quote, if you saw two people drowning, a Jew and a non-Jew, the Torah says you save the Jewish life first. Rabbi Yitzhak Ginsburg told the Jewish Week, that's the largest circulation Jewish newspaper in America, quote, if every simple cell in the Jewish body entails divinity, is a part of God, then every strand of DNA is part of God. Therefore, something is special about the Jewish DNA. Later, Rabbi Ginsburg asked rhetorically, and listen to these words very carefully, ladies and gentlemen. We should repeat these words again and again and again until people get the understanding of what these words mean and what the nature of this Jewish supremacist sect, an extremist sect, and a powerful sect, obviously, with their pictures in the White House, a powerful sect. What they believe. Quote, if a Jew needs a liver, can you take the liver of an innocent non-Jew passing by to save him? Question mark. The Torah would probably permit that. Jewish life has an infinite value, he explained. There is something infinitely more holy and unique about Jewish life than non-Jewish life. So that's some of the quotes from Lubavitch movement and ladies and gentlemen, it's an incredible movement. And where is the expose? Where are the condemnations? How can the President of the United States allow rabbis who believe in these kinds of ideas, how can he let them preach and teach in the White House of the United States of America? And when Mr. Joshua Bolton heads White House policy, and in fact it says, Bush himself has said that he actually helps set policy. Is he setting policy in the interest of the United States of America, or is he setting policy for the nation and the interests of the nation of Israel, or what he sees to be or thinks to be the agenda of the Jewish people and Jewish organizations? It's called anti-Semitism to question whether or not there may be a dual loyalty here, or even maybe a single or a supreme loyalty of these people to the Jewish people and to Israel. I think there is a supreme loyalty. This doesn't mean that all Jews have that opinion, but it certainly does mean that many influential and powerful Jews have that opinion. As Dr. Steven Steinleit so eloquently said in a quote that I've used so many times, where he said, as a typical Jew of my generation, I went to Jewish summer camp, saluted a foreign flag, dressed in a foreign uniform, reflecting its colors, was taught that Israel was a true homeland, and was taught that Jews were superior intellectually and morally over Gentiles, and that the Gentiles were basically someone, or the Gentiles were to be feared, and not never to be trusted. That's basically what he says that he learned as a young Jewish man for many, many years of his youth. And this kind of thing exists. Now, if this is true, then can you really put people with that kind of an opinion into positions of influence over American policy? And certainly we've had that. I remember the King, the Camp David Accords, when President Clinton was there. And I remember specifically when the moderators for the Camp David Accord were Dennis Ross and a bunch of other Jewish extremists, partisans of Israel. How in the world do you, you know, I tell you what, you know, if the LSU football team plays Alabama, you know, the fans at LSU and would never tolerate the entire officiating crew to be members of the Alabama football team. And I can tell you that the Alabama people would never allow the officiating crew to be all members of the LSU football team. I mean, how in the world do you get an open-minded and an approach that's fair in terms of being a moderator or a broker of peace in the Middle East if you have a one-sided position? And ladies and gentlemen, it's not just a question of one-sidedness in terms of dealing with the Yasser Arafat or dealing with the Palestinian question as compared to Israel. You know, I'm talking about one-sided as compared to America. Israel's cost us hundreds of billions of dollars, and more importantly, the Jewish supremacists have got us involved in these incredibly damaging wars, such as the Iraq wars, and they're really trying to get us into another world war right now. And it's a terrible concern, and it could mean the very end of our civilization, the end of our freedom in America, if we listen to the Jewish extremists and get involved in the Iran war. I'm going to cut it close tonight, and I've still got some itinerary ahead of me, but I'm reporting to you from another part of the world, and I'm continuing to spread the information. And by the way, I spend most of my time in Europe, among European nations, and in America and Canada. Of any place, I think I spend more time in America and in Europe. But I continue to do my best to kind of spread the information and the word all over the world. It all contributes to what's going on. In a world of mass communication between peoples, people go to university and school and do business across the world, the more that a good consensus arises and a good understanding of the Jewish question, the more that that occurs, the more this will also filter back to Europeans and Americans, and it will filter back into our own respective societies. I want to tell you that I appreciate very much your support and your help in this cause. I'm doing my best. There's another Duke Report being prepared right now for the printer. I think you're really going to enjoy the issue. And this issue goes into the immigration issue primarily and the role of Jewish supremacists in the immigration issue. So I'm going to go back and work on that now. It seems my work is never done. I go out and speak. I'm kind of hoarse from speaking today, and I've spoke to about six classes today. And I've had conferences with a number of different educators, and I try to get over very clearly the issues that that I deal with in Jewish supremacism. We're working on very hard getting an edition of the book published here. And all over the world, we are definitely reaching more and more people, and there is a receptive audience for these issues. Well, I think that's about it. If I can figure out how to do this, we're trying to get everything completed here. And James, thanks for doing that connection, and we're going to work on that because we'd like to do a program, more interview programs. I think that's the most interesting way for the listeners, and we're going to work on trying to do that more and more as we go along. Well, anyway, that's it. Thanks so much for being with me, and I'll be with you again tomorrow. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.com.